The book that I'm writing about Master's life is almost done. So many of the stories that I've told you about him over the years are in that book. Many of them aren't. It's no longer easy for me to cull which ones are and which ones aren't. And the feeling that I had in writing that book again and again was as if Master were actually writing it through me. I could feel his consciousness writing it through me. It was no surprise to me. It's been no surprise to me when many people have said that it has the same vibration as Autobiography of a Yogi, because in a sense it's the same author. The work that we do in service to Master should all be done with this consciousness of trying to ask him to act through us. I was very interested in something that was in the Reader's Digest in the last issue, the January issue. It's a condensation of a book called Life After Life. And people who have gone through the death experience have been proclaimed clinically dead and then been revived. There are a number of cases like that. These people all have come back describing basically the same experiences. And one was that at a certain point they met this being that was all light. And this being would ask them how they had behaved in this world, what they had learned. And the thing that particularly touched me was that they found that the being greeted their mistakes that they'd made and so on with warm, compassionate understanding and even humor. I kind of like that humor. Because actually this is the way that any wise or compassionate person would react. It's inconceivable that you reach a certain level of wisdom climbing up the ladder to the astral world, and there you find these great gods and so on who are supposed to judge how you've been in this world, and suddenly the switch is flicked and you've got somebody in a rage, eager to condemn you, sort of straining at the leash to throw you downwards. It doesn't make sense. When we consider working to please Master, I think we must assume first of all that he's pleased already by the very fact that we want to please him. It's not as if you know how many people get into this exaggerated scrupulosity of feeling that, oh, I haven't done enough yet, he couldn't possibly be pleased, sort of as if they have the feeling that they'll probably land in heaven skidding across the marble floor all out of breath. We don't need to worry about if we haven't done enough, we get it in the neck. It's that when we love God, the very desire to serve Master was enough to please him. He didn't really care that much what we did, although surely he was pleased when we did a good job. But the important thing was that he wanted us to have that desire, that humble desire. And what I've loved in that connection was what he said about James Collar. James Collar had commotion karma from the day he came there. Everything he did was wrong. He just had a talent for it. One time at at the Lake Shrine, there were ducks that were coming, and Master didn't want them to eat the fish in the lake. So he got a little 22 or a BB gun or something that somebody loaned him, and he shot over the heads of the ducks to scare them. He didn't want to kill the ducks, but he wanted to frighten them. And James looked at Master and said, like this. So Master put the gun down and turned aside to do something else, and James picked up the gun and just shot at random and killed two ducks. There was a woman, an outsider, who I think she was staying there at the time, but wasn't a member, and she saw this and reported James to the police. The police came in, created a big commotion. That's when Master said he has commotion karma. Even he, Master said, would be liberated. So, I can say with some authority that he doesn't mind how bumbling we are as long as we do our best. And no one could ever say that James didn't do his best. He certainly did. If we love God and if we love Master and try to serve him to the best of our ability, not feeling that he's angry if you don't do well enough, there's no reason for him to be angry if you don't do well enough. There's this whole world of 3 billion people, most of whom aren't doing well enough. He's got to adjust his sights down to this level. It's not as if we were in the causal plane. But he loves you, and he wants to see you try your best, that's all. As long as you keep trying, that's all that matters. How are you to try? It isn't what you do so much as the spirit with which you do it. What we do, it will be a sign of bad spirit if we don't do it as well as we can. So I'm not offering this as a sort of a cop-out for doing a good job. You should do as good a job as you can. But remember that that which will please Master is if you work with love and not only offer what you're doing to him, but also feel that he is offering it through you. He's doing it through you. That it's his energy that's flowing. You'll find that this positive attitude will be able to bring that energy flowing much more freely. If there is this constant worry, and everybody seems to go through this, oh gee, am I pleasing him? Am I really doing well enough? Oh, I hope he's not angry with me. If you get rid of that thought, which is just not in his mind at all, if you just say that I want to do better and better, have a completely positive consciousness in what you're doing, that the joy of serving him is all that really matters, you'll find that then he will be able to work through you better and better. Because actually we shut him out when we say, oh, you're not pleased. We shut him out by our lack of faith. We shut him out when we imagine him displeased, imagine him angry with us and so on. Whatever you've done, Master told us again and again that a room can be in darkness for a 100, 1,000 years. You don't get rid of the darkness by beating at it with a stick. You get rid of it by turning on the light. So don't beat at the darkness in you. Don't beat yourself for having darkness in you. Just try to love God more completely, that's all. Understand that you've come a long way already, a long way, just to be here in this room, just to be on this path, just to be wanting to know what truth is all about, just to be longing for God. Out of thousands of people, maybe one will have that kind of desire. It was interesting when we went up to the symposium in Vancouver to see how many people, all of whom consider themselves on the path, I think, in one way or another. And yet very few were interested in seeking a truth that is inside as opposed to outside. They might have said, oh yeah, I want it inside too. But what they were really trying to create was a heaven in this world. And the consciousness of not having any desires for anything except God, not wanting to please anyone except God, being willing to take whatever tests come if it's going to bring them closer to God, I didn't see very much of that kind of consciousness there. It was more, as Vijay put it, sort of trying to create heaven in this world. Very few people in this world are really out to seek God with the thought, well, Prahlad had an amusing experience. Some lady in Israel had been studying a little bit of yoga, and she just heard about reincarnation. She said to him, and guess what? We get to come back. Master said that there comes a point where all these lives begin to, this repetition begins to assume an anguishing monotony. And this is how I think we feel here that we've had a good time, but enough is enough. So, don't put yourself down for not being up where Christ is. Don't put yourself down for not being up where other people that you see around you are. You may think that they're further along than you are, but there's absolutely no way you have of knowing. There is... some people have all sorts of experiences and others have none, and it doesn't at all mean that the person who has experiences is more spiritual than the person who has none. You can't compare yourself with another person. Don't try to. It's unwholesome. It feeds the ego either in a positive or a negative way, but both ways are bad. Compare yourself with yourself. Try to meditate more deeply every day than the day before it. Try to serve God more and more fully. And if you make a mistake or if things go bad, just say, well, think of all the karma I'm burning out, and just keep going. No matter how many times you fall on your face, just get up and keep going. There was a disciple at Mount Washington who had a vision of the monks. He saw Master in a blinding light, and he saw these disciples running toward that light. And he said that only four actually entered it while he was watching that light. And then he noticed that people would fall down flat on their faces while running. Sometimes it took them a long time to get up again. And they'd sort of gradually get up and start plodding along and then running a little faster and then getting a little more courage and running fast again. But I said, well, did everybody fall? He said, oh, sure. And I thought, that's nice, because not that nice that everybody falls, but nice as long as you're falling that you've got company. Nice to know that you can still make it. And nice to know that you can get up and finally start running, because then you start thinking, well, why not get up and run right away? Much of it is a question of getting the faith to try hard again. Ananda Mohima used the simile once of a person with a boat trying to get into the ocean. And he goes in at one point and the waves beat him back to shore, and then he goes on down the beach again and he tries again and the waves beat him back to shore, and he tries several times, so maybe he gives up. But if he keeps trying, finally he finds a point where the waves, instead of beating him back, there's an undercurrent that tows him out into the ocean. And so it is that many times devotees on the path will make a strong effort for a while, and then some piece of karma will come up and beat them back to shore again. And first of all, they get discouraged. And it takes them a long time to, if they don't give up altogether. If you give up in this life, you're sunk for this life. But if you don't, you can just keep going. Don't ever give up. Don't ever give up, Master said. And then you'll just keep on advancing. No matter what you've gone through, you can keep on advancing. So, what happens is that they try and they feel that they're going great guns, and suddenly this wave beats them back to shore. And if they don't give up, then still maybe they feel a bit tired or exhausted or discouraged before they try again. They may sort of wander a bit and just sort of meditate lightly and not seriously for a while. Then they get the courage to try again, and they suddenly with full vigor go in and get beaten back again, and they go, oh my God, again. But that's karma. That is how your karma works. And each time, if you don't give up, what you're really doing is besting that karma. And the time comes when finally that karma begins to balance out. Some saint put it that you don't know when there's a nail in a board how much it's going to take to pull that nail out, because you don't know how hard the board is, and more than that, you don't know how long the nail is inside the board. It could just be a short thing, maybe one tug and it would come out. It might be a very long thing and take lots of tugging. All you really know is that it takes tugging to get it out, and that if you tug long enough, it's bound to come out. So that's what we should be on the path. Never giving up. Never saying that, oh, well, I've tried and it's hopeless, because there is no other choice. This is the thing that we've got to arrive at in our spiritual lives, where we understand that we have no other choice. It's God or nothing. Not God or becoming a millionaire. Because without God, nothing is real, nothing exists. So you've got to bring your will to that point where you say that no matter what I do, There is only one thing for me, and that is to find God, to find God through it. And if you work in that way, and if you fail, don't think God is angry with you. Just realize that he's sorry with you and wants to help you. And if you keep trying, that his strength and his energy will be there to lift you up. This is Master's promise to us. This is what Master told us again and again. He said, I don't mind your faults. God doesn't mind your faults. All he wants is that you love him. And if you love him enough, it matters. You know that story that he told of the time Narada, Jim Agee, was in was sent down from heaven to find all the great devotees. And he found many different saints and ascetics and so on all across the land of India. But one impressed him particularly. He was an old man who had for 80 years had been practicing stern austerities. And when he met Narada, he said, but listen, all these years I've been practicing these austerities and God still hasn't come to me. Why don't you, when you get back there to Vaikuntha, tell him that it's high time he came around here, showed himself. I've given up so much for him. And Narada thought, my, all this ascetic practice, he'd fasted and his body was just a skeleton and he'd worked so hard at it and so on and punished his body so severely. And Narada was very impressed. Well, shortly before he went to heaven, he happened to be walking and he saw this young man, dead drunk, trying to put a post into a hole to make a fence. And he just couldn't quite hit that hole with the post. He'd hit it on the left side and hit it on the right side, practically fall into it himself. And all the time he was sort of cursing God for not helping him out. And Narada thought, my goodness, what kind of a person is this? And so when the young man heard that Narada was from heaven, then he said, well, when you get up there, tell him to come on down here and help me make this fence. I need help. But he said it with love, but Narada only got the message of the preposterousness of this drunkard, thinking that God would bother with him when there were all these great devotees across the land who had given up everything to find him. And so when he got back, he told him about these different saints, and he told him about the ascetic. And the God searched his all-knowing heart, and he said, "Well, I don't know this devotee. You surprise me." And Narada said, "But sir, you must know him. After all, he's been for 80 years doing nothing but chanting mantras and self-discipline and asceticism and vairagya of the most intense kind." And the Lord said, "Well, I'm sorry, I don't know him." And then Narada started, as a P.S. practically, to tell this joke about this young man whom he'd met, who was dead drunk. And God, before he finished the story, said, "Oh yes, the one who was trying to make a fence, huh?" Narada said, "Listen, Lord, what is this? You don't know this one who has been seeking you all his life, and you know that one who is too drunk to seek you?" And the Lord said, "Well, but he has great love." And Narada said, "Well, I don't know how he can even express that love through the fumes." So, the Lord said, "Well, why don't you just perform a little test? Go down there and tell them each that I'll be glad to come to them, but first I'm passing elephants through the eye of a needle." Well, Narada took this very strange message down to the hoary old ascetic. And as soon as the ascetic had heard it, he said, "What? I never heard of such crazy activities in all my life. Passing elephants through the eye of a needle. What kind of a way to run the universe is that? I've wasted these 80 years. He said, "Goodbye, God, and all your crazy crowd. I'm going back to the city to enjoy myself while I still can." So Narada just sort of shook his head at this and went to the young man. As soon as the young man saw him approaching, he dropped everything and ran, and he said, "Tell me, what did the Lord say? What did the Lord say?" And Narada was most surprised because he hadn't expected this kind of intensity of yearning. And so he told him that the message that God was too busy to come right now, but as soon as he'd finished passing these elephants through the eye of a needle, he'd come. Well, the devotee, the young man, just couldn't have cared less why God was busy passing elephants through the eye of a needle. All that was important to him was that God promised he would come. And he was so happy, he started dancing in a circle, and he took Narada by the hands and made him dance with him. And his drunkenness disappeared, and suddenly he saw God was right in their midst, dancing with them. So the thing that Master told us is that the only thing that touches God is that we love him. And it doesn't matter how many faults we have if we love him. But it doesn't matter how pure and perfect we are if we don't. All he wants from us is that we serve him with that kind of love. So here we have this wonderful opportunity, and those of you who don't live here can do it too. It's only harder, because it's harder to see that you're working for God when you've got a boss who's trying to make a million. But you are. In the long run, just take it that you're working for him, that this is the particular instrument of torture that he's given to you to teach you a few lessons, maybe. Because wherever your karma places you, that's where you must be grateful to serve. There was one woman back east who used to, I don't know if she's still alive or her husband's still alive, but her husband mocked the path. She was a very dear disciple of Master's, but because she was married, she stayed with her husband and would come out to Master whenever she could. And her husband mocked at all her devotion and practices and everything. It was very hard, but it was her karma, and she took it in the right way. And it made her so patient and so good. And I just remember Master talking so appreciatively of her. He mentioned how they'd gone out for a drive, and she drove him, and she never said a word the whole time. He said that to him was an indication of how she had understood that their communion was spiritual. She wasn't interested in asking him questions all the time and so on. Just feeling his vibrations was enough. And this is how Master's closest disciples were with him, asking very little, but just trying to feel the vibrations and feel uplifted by that. You get so much more that way, and your questions are answered that way too. So this is the way that Master wants us to be, not busying ourselves with theories and outward things all the time, but just quietly and humbly in our hearts, loving him and feeling that everything that we're doing for him. I was interested just the other day. I was talking to Leo Cox, who was one of the monks at Mount Washington for quite a while. He was the one who used to plaster his bedroom walls with pictures of Master. He was remembering something that I didn't know about at all in the first place, so there's no question of my having forgotten it. But he said that when we were working on at India Center, I was pouring cement, mixing the cement so fast that everybody was just having to work three times as hard as they felt they could to keep up with me, and getting out of breath and so on. And they were all weightlifters. I was just most of the time working in the office. But the reason that I wasn't conscious of working so hard, but now that he told me, I remembered why I must have been working that hard. It was that every shovel full of sand or gravel I threw in, I was just saying, Om Guru, and it was just such a joy working for Master, and every shovel full was like doing arati before an altar. And there was such an energy flowing as a result of that consciousness. So it is that in whatever we do, it's puja. If we do it with the right spirit, you can be shoveling cement, you can be planting the garden, you can be writing letters, whatever it is that you're doing. If in your mind you're saying, I'm doing this for God and Guru, just God and Guru like this, and you'll find such joy. But it's their joy that you're feeling working through you, because that's how they can work. When we say yes to life, we don't mean say yes to what many people call life. I mean, they think it's living if you're in Las Vegas at a nightclub. In fact, they have this advertisement for the nightclubs there, Come Alive or something, you know. I forget how it goes exactly, but anyway, that's the idea of it. That you're not really alive unless you're having a good time. Jesus called such people dead. Could I have a drink, please? Jesus said, let the dead bury their dead, meaning worldly people are dead because they don't have a sense of real life, thank you, the source of life, which is the inner. So, when we say yes to life, remember what Jesus said, I came that you might have life and have it more abundantly. What he's talking about is being aware of that divine life flowing in your veins, that divine river of life flowing in your spine, that joy that you feel, just, I know, waking up in the morning, going to sleep at night, and just lying there in the bed and feeling this great joy flowing over me. This is the kind of life that we're talking about. Say yes to that life. Don't say no to it by saying, oh, I'm unworthy, or God hasn't come to me, when will he come, or I'm so far from it, or all these thoughts that come, or maybe God's not pleased with me. All this is negativity. Say yes to that life. Say yes to it. Say that whatever I'm doing, I'm going to express more of it. And you will find that more and more will begin to flow through you. Don't doubt. Just say yes. Even if you don't understand, say yes. And you'll find that that understanding will come in time. Some people are very upset with us who went through the experience of the fire with us, who aren't in the community. And I was just sort of wondering how this could be. Usually when people share a common disaster, there's sort of a common bond. And it occurred to me that very possibly it's because we haven't reacted to that experience with the same misery that they have, that we've come through with a strong positive affirmation. And I noticed this at Mount Washington, and I've noticed this many times since then on the path, that those who are not saying yes to life, those who are getting out of tune, excuse me, those who are despondent or something, they don't like to be around people with positive attitude. Don't worry, therefore, if some people don't like you because you're positive. Just figure that's their problem. You're not here to please people, you're here to please God. Be satisfied in your heart that you love God. Be satisfied in your heart that you want to please and serve only Him. And those who are in tune with that thought, they will love you. They will grow with you in that consciousness. But ultimately, the day is going to come when, just like that book, Life After Life, that time is going to come to every one of us, some sooner, some later. But we're going to suddenly find that everything that we have done in this world is left behind. The only thing that is left with us is the karmic tendencies that we have developed through loving people more deeply, through trying to become more understanding, more wise. This is an amusing aspect of that article in the Reader's Digest. They said that the lesson that they learned, those who had gone over there and gone through this experience, was that the two things that they were supposed to get in this world were the ability to love other people and to learn. From the learning idea, they took it that you should go to college, get as many degrees as possible, read as much as possible. Obviously, the learning that's intended has nothing to do with intellectual learning. It has to do with getting wisdom, getting understanding. And all I getting, get understanding, the Bible says. That when things go wrong, try to understand why they've gone wrong and what you can gain from it in order to be more wise, in order to be more accepting of life. So do that in this world. Always tell yourself every morning and every evening, this could be your last day. Everything that you own could be gone from one minute to the next. Always live with one foot in eternity. And just keep that consciousness that your only real life is in Him. Everything else is a temporary dream that you have to put up with gratefully, joyously, not with a sense of sufferance, but with a sense of privilege that we are here to serve God, but know that it is His dream, and that Master didn't come to help us to create a beautiful dream. He came to help us to get out of this mud puddle of a world and to take us into the arms of infinity. So this is the affirmation that we want to hold on Master's birthday. Not the idea that Master was born into this world to live with us as a man, but that the divine consciousness was born into this world through him in order to help us to get out of this world and to realize the higher world of God consciousness. So maybe that birthday will come to us in this life too, that divine consciousness will be born in us, and we will realize that we are no longer this ego or this body, but that we are sons and daughters of the infinite, with as much right to claim his infinite joy as any of the great masters who ever lived.